We are to leave father and mother, the most important relationship we have as human beings until we get married, father and mother. If we're to sever that relationship to solidify the new one, that means that every other relationship in our lives must also take a back seat. That means our relationship with our career, with our friends, with our hobbies, with television, must be reprioritized according to the new ultimate relationship that we have on a human level with spouse and spouse.
Relationships, they can be an amazing source of joy and pleasure, or quite the opposite. To have fulfillment, we must follow God's blueprint. That's our plan today on The Connection with Skip Heitzig. First, grab your mobile device. We want to invite you to tell your friends on social media that you're listening to The Connection with Skip Heitzig by sharing this Skip Quip from today's message.
You see, marriage isn't held together by chains, but threads. Thousands of tiny little threads that you weave with your spouse every single day.
On Deck, Pastor Skip takes a look at what God wanted the marriage relationship to be like. But first, we've heard many stories of how this ministry has helped listeners get more out of their Bible study times. Did you know you can be a part of this work too? Just visit connectiononline.org/give. And stick around after the teaching, because we have some great Bible study resources we want to tell you about. For now, mark your Bibles in Genesis chapter 2, and let's join Skip as he begins our study.
This was the prototype, man. This was the first batch, man and a woman brought together. And he said, "This is bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She will be called woman because she was taken out of man." So marriage begins with identity. Here's the second principle found in the next verse. Marriage requires responsibility. And here it is. "Therefore, because of this reason, because I have brought the two, Ish and Ishah, together, therefore a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh." There's three parts of that directive. It's the best marriage counseling on the books. One short verse. Notice the process. First of all, leaving. What that means is, leaving father and mother, it means that one relationship must be severed in order to solidify another relationship. One must be severed in order to solidify. A man shall leave, in Hebrew, abandon. Now, I need to explain something. It doesn't mean that you lose all contact with your parents. "Never call me again. I'm getting married today. Leave me alone. I'm moving away." It doesn't mean that. It means, essentially, cut the cord of dependence. It means your parents treat you, the newlywed couple, in an adult relationship now. It means the parents give the children the space to grow up and solidify their own relationship. I always ask a young couple, when they come up to me, they say, "We're getting married." I go, "See, look." She'll go, "See, look at that. Ring. I'm getting married." I always say, "Congratulations, I'm excited for you." But somewhere in the conversation early on, I ask this question, "What do your parents think?" "Well, who cares what my parents think?" "No, I care. What do your parents think?" And usually it's, "Oh, they're so excited." But sometimes I'll get, "They think he's a creep." Well, that's important to me. It's important because maybe not at that point, but it could be that later on down the line, the parent will be persuasive toward that girl or guy. And you will seek to transform your mate into the image that your parents have for that one. I know some couples that never leave their father or mother. Their parents can be dead and they still haven't left mother or father. That relationship has hijacked that new marriage. And so I'll say to you parents, if you're having children get married, release your kids. Give them space. Don't try to run their lives. Your goal for your kids, even if you just recently had children, your goal is to get that child ready to launch. They're not going to stay there forever. You are preparing that child to one day to launch. And we make that a symbolic part of every wedding. We have the bride walk down the aisle, typically, usually with her father. And I ask the question publicly, who brings this woman to be married to this man? And he will typically say, I do, or we do, or her mother and I do. But it's the giving away of the bride. That's symbolic, but all important. I'm fortunate. I have a father-in-law who understood this principle. And he was at first service this morning. He typically is. And I got to thank him publicly that early in our marriage, when my wife Lenny would call him for advice, he was very cautious in giving advice. He would say, what does Skip think about this before I answer the question? Have you talked it over with him first? And he would be very cautious at dispensing advice. And when he gave the advice, he would always give the caveat. Now, that's just my opinion. If that's not what your husband agrees with, scrap what I just said. He was a wise man. There's something else to note before we move on to the second. If we are to leave father and mother, the most important relationship we have as human beings until we get married, father and mother. If we're to sever that relationship to solidify the new one, that means that every other relationship in our lives must also take a back seat. That means our relationship with our career, with our friends, with our hobbies, with television, must be reprioritized according to the new ultimate relationship that we have on a human level with spouse and spouse. If we cut the ties with father and mother, then other ties must also be cut. A wise person once said, a successful marriage demands a divorce from your own self-love. That's the first directive, leaving. Here's the second, cleaving. Therefore, a man will leave his father and mother and be joined. That's the New King James. If you have an old King James, it says cleave, cleave. It means to be glued together or welded together, if I can take the liberties. It conveys the idea of permanence. Now, I do something when I perform a wedding ceremony. I never ask the couple to say, I do. And I tell them this before the wedding. I say, I'm going to ask you a question, and the answer is not, I do. It's not. I've been like working up my whole life to say that. You're not going to say that. Because I do means I do right now. I want you to say, I will. Because I will means I do now and I will continue to do that in the future. So I'm going to ask you the question, will you take this woman to be your God-given wife in this covenant of marriage? Will you love her? Will you honor her? And forsaking all others, will you live only under her as long as you both shall live? And I say, I want you to say it loud. I will. That's a statement. That's a commitment. That's the idea of cleaving, gluing, being welded together. It speaks of permanence, permanence. Togetherness in a permanent situation. You Skip, does that mean that there can never be separation in a marriage relationship under any circumstance? I'm not saying that. Because Jesus in Matthew 19 gave the one exception. And we covered that last Wednesday. But I'm going to say something you know is true. No matter what the circumstance is, there is never a separation without damage. Can you think of a single divorce where there has not been some damage? Can you think of one? Here's the idea. If I were to take two pieces of paper and glue them together and let the glue dry, and a week later or a month later or 5 years later or 20 years later say, I've changed my mind. I want to separate those two pieces of paper. Could you separate the two pieces of paper without damage? Will they look the same once they're separated? No, they won't. I may have changed my mind toward that union, but if I try to separate that, it will not be done without much damage. And so Jesus Christ himself said, what God has joined together, let not man put asunder. But here's the big rub. Here's the big problem for us. We live in a culture and a society where permanence isn't even part of our thinking system anymore. We've taken God's blueprint and essentially we've redrawn the blueprint. We've looked at God's blueprint on building the house of marriage and we go, I don't like this blueprint. There's no back door in it. I got to draw a back door in it. And you look at God's ideal and he has a front door and the door closes and that's it. And you go, I don't think so. I want to put a back door in this puppy. And so every week, couples still come to the altar and they still say, oh yes, for better, for worse, for richer, for poor, in sickness and health, till death do us part. All the music, all the beauty. But under their breath, they're saying, unless there's a glitch, because we have taken the idea of a permanent bond completely out of our thinking, may God put it back in as we look at his blueprints. What this means on a practical level is that a husband promises to be faithful to his wife. I will until death do us part. That means if she's not as pretty as she is on that wedding day, if she decides, I'm not going to cook like I used to cook when the kids were younger, I'm not going to tidy up the house like we did earlier on, that he's going to say, I still am committed to you with as much love as I began. And if he, that guy that she's next to, gets a big gut, loses all of his hair, has bad breath, you're thinking, Skip, you just described my husband. I'm just... that the commitment of permanence doesn't change. Leaving, cleaving. Here's the third, weaving. Therefore, a man will leave his father and mother, be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. What does that mean? First of all, on a primary physical level, I guess it could mean that when a child is produced as a result of that union, you could look at that child and say, we have become one flesh. We have merged two people into one unit. But I think it means more than that. I think it means one flesh, that you share everything. You share bodies, yes. You share possessions. You share insights. You become one flesh. In an excellent book, Wayne Mack describes the one flesh process when he writes, it is the type of relationship that is shared with no one else other than one's mate. It is a partnership in every area of life for as long as both partners live. In other words, there's absolutely nothing about which one spouse may say to the other, that's none of your business. The wife has complete and unfettered access to every area of her husband's life, and so also the husband to every area of his wife's life. There are no locked doors or secret hiding places. How does this happen? Takes a long time. It does. Notice what the text says. It doesn't say the two will be one flesh. It says the two will what? Become one flesh. That's a process. That's a process. It's a process of weaving. You see, marriage isn't held together by chains, but threads. Thousands of tiny little threads that you weave with your spouse every single day. Now, if you go back to that analogy I brushed through moments ago, that a couple is glued or welded together, you might get the picture. A couple years ago, I was over in France and I stood in front of the Eiffel Tower. And access was denied. The thing was closed down. I go, why is it closed? They said, because they're welding it. I said, welding it? This thing's been up for over 100 years and now you're starting to weld it? They go, oh, no. We go over the joints every few years and we reapply weld and we reapply fastening bolts, etc. We make the joints that were originally there stronger so it will last longer. And I thought, that's a great analogy. Go back over the joints that brought you together, that formed strength in your marriage, and build upon those things. Marriage is not held together by chains, but by threads. Many of them, thousands of them. So a marriage begins with identity, Ish and Isha becoming a covenant unit. It requires your responsibility of leaving, reprioritizing, cleaving, a permanent bond, and weaving. And all of that leads to the third, the final, the apex. All of that forms the basis for intimacy. Verse 25 is the final principle. And they were both naked, the man and his wife, and were not ashamed. The word naked means to lay bare. And the idea of the language from my studies, it's a reciprocal idea. It's a limited reciprocal idea. In other words, they are naked and laid bare with one another and before one another. And in that context is vulnerability. This is intimacy. This is what every couple longs for, intimacy. I didn't say sex, I said intimacy. Two different things. One leads to the other. Intimacy leads to sexuality. But it's interesting, when I say the word intimacy to men, they think of one thing. If I say that word to women, they're thinking on a whole different track. Intimacy, that open, unguarded relationship, that transparent sharing where the couple shares a discussion and shares silence and shares history and shares joys and shares heartbreaks, all of that together is intimacy. They were both naked. They had nothing to be ashamed of. They were open. They were unguarded. They were vulnerable. And it wasn't until sin entered into the relationship where that was spoiled, as we'll see in coming studies. So we can see then that marriage on one hand can be infinitely rewarding at its best, and on the other hand, unspeakably oppressive at its worst. And there's a lot of stages in between. Here's God's principle. Here's God's pattern. Leaving, cleaving, weaving. And when you leave, cleave, and weave, you achieve intimacy. That's his plan. That's his pattern. Very, very simple. Three short verses that will be replicated over and over again in the scripture and pointed back to in the New Testament four times because of the place of primary reference. I want to close with an illustration written by a young woman about her grandparents. She, in observing them, noted that all that we spoke about this morning was embodied in their lives, and there's nothing like an example to speak to us. She writes, "My grandparents were married for over a half a century, and they played their own special game from time to time, a game that they began when they met each other. The goal of their game was to write the word smiley in a surprise place for the other to find. They took turns leaving Smiley around the house. As soon as one of them discovered it, it was their turn to hide it once more. They dragged Smiley with their fingers through the sugar and the flour containers to await whoever was preparing the next meal. They smeared it in the dew on the windows overlooking the patio where my grandma always fed us warm homemade pudding with blue food coloring. Smiley was written in the steam left on the mirror after a hot shower, where it would reappear again and again, bath after bath. At one point, my grandmother even unrolled an entire roll of toilet paper to leave Smiley on the very last sheet. There was no end to the places Smiley would pop up. Little notes with Smiley inscribed hurriedly were found on dashboards, car seats, or taped to steering wheels. The notes were stuffed inside shoes and left under pillows. Smiley was written in the dust upon the mantle and traced on the ashes of the fireplace. This mysterious word was as much a part of my grandparents' house as the furniture. It took me a long time before I was able to fully appreciate my grandparents' game. Skepticism had kept me from believing in true love, one that is pure and enduring. However, I never doubted my grandparents' relationship. They had love down pat. It was more than their flirtatious little games were all about. It was a way of life. Their relationship was based on a devotion and passionate affection, which not everyone is lucky enough to experience. Grandma and Grandpa held hands every chance they could. They stole kisses as they bumped into each other in their tiny little kitchen. They finished each other's sentences and shared daily crossword puzzles and word jumble. My grandma whispered to me about how cute my grandpa was, how handsome an old man he had grown to be. She claimed that she really knew how to pick him. Before every meal, they bowed their heads and gave thanks, marveling at their blessings, a wonderful family, good fortune, and thanks for each other. But there was a dark cloud in my grandparents' life. My grandmother had breast cancer. The disease had first appeared 10 years earlier. As always, Grandpa was with her every step of the way. He comforted her in their yellow room, painted that color so she could always be surrounded by sunshine, even when she was too sick to go outside. Now the cancer was once again attacking her body. With the help of a cane and my grandfather's steady hand, they still went to church every Sunday morning. But my grandmother grew steadily weaker until finally she could not leave the house anymore. For a while, Grandpa would go to church alone, praying to God to watch over his wife. And then one day, what we all dreaded finally happened. Grandma was gone. Smiley. It was scrawled in yellow on the pink ribbons of my grandmother's funeral bouquet. As the crowd thinned and the last mourners turned to leave, my aunts and uncles, cousins, and other family members came forward and gathered around. They gathered around Grandma one last time. Grandpa stepped up to my grandmother's casket, and taking a shaky breath, he began to sing to her. Through his tears and grief, the song came a deep, throaty lullaby. Shaking with my own sorrow, I will never forget that moment, for I knew then that although I couldn't begin to fathom the depth of their love, I had been privileged to witness its unmatched beauty. And he sang, S-H-M-I-L-Y, see how much I love you. Smiley. What that man and that woman had was a legacy that was the greatest possible gift they could pass on to future generations. I know that I'm asking God for a tall order when I ask him that this wouldn't be just another marriage series. They're a dime a dozen. They're in every church across America. We've done them. I'm not praying for a great series. I'm praying for great results. In humility, in changed lives, in changed marriages, so that generations to follow can feel the warmth from a flame that burns so brightly as our lives and our marriages.
Only God can make a marriage something that's beautiful. After all, He's the one who designed it. Now, here's a resource package available only from The Connection and only for a short time.
The pressure on our world is reaching explosive levels. The epicenter of the Mideast dominates world headlines and breaking news. Some run away, but in February, Skip Heitzig took a team and went right to the heart of need.
Everybody I spoke to lost somebody. One man lost all of his children. So here you have a religious group that's well-armed, that believes in death, that believes you either convert to our way of practicing our religion or we will kill you.
In February, Skip went to Lebanon, Iraq, and Jordan to bring relief from Reload Love. This month only, The Connection is offering a resource package that includes a personal and private audio briefing from Skip about his trip.
Every single person here had to find shelter elsewhere, and they had to leave everything in their homes.
Along with this private update from Skip, you'll also receive the book by Tom Doyle about the incredible pressure believers are under in the Mideast, killing Christians. The stories are breathtaking, the lessons soul-stirring in this just-published book. You'll also receive an update from Dr. Stephen Collins about his controversial project in Jordan to discover the real site for Sodom. All this, and as a special bonus, a full-length Easter message CD from Skip for a suggested donation of $30. And your support will help keep The Connection going forward in 2015. Call toll-free 1-800-922-1888, 1-800-922-1888, or order at connectiononline.org.
In training the next generation, and telling them about Jesus and insisting on forgiveness, that's the thing that's going to change the culture.
When you contact us, you can also order a copy of today's teaching, The First Wedding, for just $6. It's available on CD, and shipping is included in the cost. So give us a call at 1-800-922-1888 or visit connectiononline.org/radio. We also want to remind you about a great Bible study tool at connectiononline.org, where Pastor Skip has over 2,000 teachings available, covering every book of the Bible. You can even listen to his latest teachings from your mobile device when you subscribe to the Skip Heitzig podcast. And if this message brought some understanding to your life about the relationships in your life, share that with us. Email us at mystory@connectiononline.org or write us at P.O. Box 95707, Albuquerque, New Mexico, 87199. We look forward to hearing from you. Next week on The Connection, Skip Heitzig begins a new message called Trouble in Paradise.
Why would God, the God of love and mercy, want you to suffer? Well, I can answer that. I don't have enough time to answer that well, but I can say God knows us, and sometimes suffering is the best way for us to grow up and grow through issues in life. And it's one of the best things for anybody.
Make a connection. Make a connection at the foot of the cross. Cast your burdens on His word. Make a connection.
The Connection is a presentation of Connection Communications, connecting you to God's never-changing truth in ever-changing times.